Let's continue looking at the financial ratios in Chapter 17. And these will be the ratios that we have not taken a look at yet. We have not gone over yet. So you're going to need your calculator or maybe a spreadsheet. The formula sheet that is on the website in Chapter 17 may be of use to you. And the balance sheet and the income statement will be important also. So you want to take the either have those available for you to bounce around on your computer screen or print them out. You ready? You ready to get started? Okay. Let us now start with the profitability ratios on slide number 20. The profitability ratios are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, profits to assets, profits to equity. And these are very popular. The net profit margin, the gross margin, the operating margin, the return on assets, and the return on equity, also known as the return on investments. There are a few others that few other flavors of these that you may come across that people use, but the idea is to see, is the company earning an adequate return on their sales, an adequate return on their assets, an adequate return on their invested capital? So let's start with slide number 21 by taking a look at the net profit margin, the also known as the after-tax profit margin. This is the rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. So take a look at the net income and the total revenue, and that's the net profit margin. Now, where do you find net income? Well, that's the bottom line number that's often called. You need to take a look at the earnings statement, the income statement, and you'll see that the net income is way at the bottom, right? Are you looking at Walgreens' income statement? What is it? What is it, net income? Do you see $2,450, right? Well, what that is actually, it's in thousands, so it's actually $2,450,000,000. So Walgreens earned $2,450,000,000, and we're going to compare that to the total revenue. Now, what's the total revenue? That's the top line number. It's sometimes called net sales. If you look at the top of the income statement, you'll see total revenue. And I get $72,217,000,000. Now, when you do these calculations, you can just ignore all the zeros, all right? Does that make sense? Just ignore all the zeros. So if you take the net income, $2,450,000, divided by the total revenue, $72,217, realizing that it's actually $72 billion, right? And divide those, you get a net profit margin of 3.39%. 0.339. Is that what you got? Make sure you do it. That's what my spreadsheet says. If I'm wrong, I want you to tell me, right? Okay, let me know. Now, is that good? 3.39? I don't know. You have to take a look at that number in the context of its competitors. So you just can't look at that number and say, that's great, I'm going to buy Walgreens stock, or that's horrible, I'm staying away from Walgreens. You have to take a look at their competitors. You have to take a look at who are their competitors. CVS, right, and Rite Aid. Which I have a friend who used to work for Rite Aid, and he was just saying, I can't believe we're still in business. But they've been hobbling along, so. We live in Ocean Beach, San Diego, and one of our favorite activities is to go to the Rite Aid OB, because, boy, you see a lot of interesting, colorful characters there. Mm-hmm. But are they the only competitors? No, 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 no. Think about it, folks. Who else is getting into the drugstore act? Right. The Walmarts and the Targets and Costco's and some of the grocery stores have pharmacies now. So, yeah, it's a tough business. So you take a look at their competitors, and if you see numbers that are similar to Walgreens, you say, oh, okay, that makes sense. Or maybe you might see something very different. What is that? That's like, as we said in the previous presentation, that's a bit of a red flag. It's, wait a minute, look at that. Why is this one so much different than the others? Exactly. So you then look at it in the context of their competitors and the stock market as a whole, and use it as just one indicator, one piece of the pie, sometimes I think of it as a stew, just all these different numbers together. No one number is the one that's going to tip you over the edge. All right? So that, now, if you go to the key statistics in Yahoo, you will see that Yahoo is reporting 3.73%. Wait a minute. What's going on here? Well, next to that number will be TTM. TTM. What a trailing 12 months. You see, what Yahoo the entire industry, what they're going to do is they're going to compute it every quarter. They're going to go back and do every quarter's net profit margin. We're just doing it for their fiscal year 2013, right? So that's why it'll differ from what Yahoo is reporting. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? I hope so. If not, then maybe you want to go back and take a look at the income statement, the quarterly income statement. We're looking at the annual. Look at the quarterly statement and then go back and add up the trailing 12 months from when it was last reported, and you'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see, oh, yeah, okay, that's why it's different. All right, great. Let's continue and go on to slide number 22, which is the gross margin. This is the profit being earned from the gross profit. What's the gross profit? Well, if you look at the income statement, you see that top line number, total revenue, but then you see something subtracted out. What is being subtracted out? Cost of revenue, or sometimes called costs of goods sold. Sure, Walgreens sold $72,217,000,000 worth of goods, but they didn't make them themselves. They had to go out and buy the pharmaceuticals and the diapers and the formula, the baby formula, and all the other things that they sell. So that's the cost of goods sold, or the cost of revenue, and we get a number called gross profit. Well, the gross margin says, okay, what are they making on their gross profit when compared to the total revenue? How do we relate the gross profit to total revenue? Take gross profit divided by total revenue, and the number I get is 29%, 29.24%. Does that make sense? In other words, you walk into a Walgreens and you see all this stuff on the shelf, and they're doing about a 29% markup. Gross markup, because remember, they have to pay the rent, they have to pay all the employees. That is not included. And so 29.24% may sound high, but wait, we've got it exactly. We have to add in all the operating costs. And again, we would take a look at that and compare it to their competitors and the industry as a whole. And so slide number 23, the same idea is going to be operating margin. We take a look at the rate of profit being earned from their net income adjusted for those non-cash items that are in the operating income section. So if you stop and take a look at the income statement, you stop and take a look at the income statement, you'll see some items that they only show one on Yahoo's income statement, and that's selling SG&A, selling general and administration. And if you remember back in the assignment for Chapter 5, the earnings call assignment, when I asked you to find out what SG&A stood for, I know some of you were going, what are they talking about? What is that? Well, remember, they had to buy all those items that they're selling, and of course, that's the 29% markup that we talked about. But, folks, they got to pay rent for the buildings. They don't usually own the buildings. They have to pay the lighting bill. That's expensive. They have to pay the employees. So those are selling general and administrative costs. So that takes a big chunk out of their... Exactly. And so we have the operating income, after they pull out all those expenses, of $3,940,000. And so we're going to relate that to the top line number, that total revenue again, $72,217,000. And remember, just get rid of all the zeros when you do your calculation. $3,940,000 divided by $72,217,000, and I get 5.46%, which is their operating margin. And yep, as it says in the bottom, you guessed it, the higher the better. It varies greatly from industry to industry. When we are looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in an industry, it is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. It may be a good signal. It may be a red flag. We don't know. It just leads us to the next piece of information. Okay? And if we take a look at Yahoo's key statistics for Walgreens, we'll see that they're at 5.2%. So it's changed in the trailing 12 months. It's gone where the net profit margin has gone up a little bit, the operating margin has gone down a little bit from the yearly data, which was what we're looking at. Next slide, 24, return on assets. Now, return on assets is similar to the first one, right, the net profit margin, but instead of relating our net income to our revenue, to our total assets, total revenue, my apologies, we're relating the net income to the assets that the company has at its disposal. So this is a measure of how profitable a company is relative to its total assets. You take the net income, which we saw in the previously was $2,450. Remember, it's $2,450,000,000. And now the total assets, where is that? Right, that's on the balance sheet. So find that on the balance sheet. Make sure you can find that on the balance sheet. And we didn't, you know, we're not, this isn't an accounting class, but why do they call it a balance sheet? Because the assets have to balance the liabilities and the equity. And when they first made these things, you know, several hundred years ago, they would put the assets on the left side and the liabilities and the equity on the right side, and the two must balance. They don't do that anymore, but they used to when they really were spreadsheets, when they taped pieces of paper together and spread them out on the desk. Yeah, that's where the name comes from. So take the net income, $2,450, divided by the total assets, $35,481, and you get 6.91%. The trailing 12 months says 6.64, so it's changed a little bit, not much. Return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets that it has available. Generally, the higher the better, and it's a fairly popular ratio. And again, we would look at their competitors and the... Yeah, right, you got that already. Now, the next one is return on equity, which is very similar to return on assets, except instead of using the total assets, what we're doing is we're subtracting out the liabilities. We're using what's called total stockholders' equity. So this is the return on equity, the return on the investment. How much of the skin in the game is the company's, right? How much do they have in the capital structure? Whereas the liabilities are somebody else's money. So we take that same net income, but instead of dividing it by total assets, we find the total stockholders' equity number. Now, did you find that? Did you find that for Walgreens on the balance sheet? $19,454,000,19,454. And if you take the same 2,450 net income divided by 19,454 total stockholders' equity, that's 12.59%. That's what I calculated. Make sure I got it. And in the intervening months, since the annual report, the trailing 12 months is actually 14.26. So it's gone up a bit, quite almost 2% for Walgreens. Because return on equity uses the stockholders' equity, the amount of capital that is owned by the company, instead of total assets for the denominator, return on equity is sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, return on equity will be much larger than return on assets. And what you will hear people say is, you want to use other people's money to make your money. And this is true in some cases. Boy, is this true in real estate. We'll see when we get to real estate at the very end. But it's also has a negative side to it, folks. Some investors think it's good. Yeah, load up on debt because that means my equity will, amount that I put in when things go well, my return will be magnified because I'm using other people's money to make my money and I'm not having to put as much money of my money into the investment. But there's a dual edge to this. What happens if you have too much debt? You can get burned badly. So that's the tug of war between having a lot of debt on your balance sheet. It sure makes your return on equity look great, but if things go badly, you can be hauled off into bankruptcy court and basically be liquidated for that's when things go really badly, folks. But that's the idea. That's the idea, and we're going to see that seriously when we get to buying on margin and real estate at the very, very end of the semester. Okay. Slide number so those were the profitability ratios. Now on slide number 26, we're going to take a look at the liquidity ratios. And we've already discussed liquidity, right? This is the ability to pay for your bills, right? To turn things into cash when it comes to when you're referring to an investment. And liquidity, when you're referring to a company, means do they have enough money to make payroll, right? Do they have enough money to make their short-term obligations? So let's read on slide 26. Financial ratios concerned with a firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due. Oh, by the way, ITS is the correct word. It's not IT apostrophe S. That's the contraction for it is. Just a little side note. Make sure you understand that. Don't use IT apostrophe S for the possessive it. It's not right. IT apostrophe S is it is. Okay, enough said. So the two major ratios are the current ratio and the asset test ratio. The net working capital, by the way, isn't a ratio, so it sort of is the oddball in this whole chapter, this whole session. But there has to be at least one oddball, right? Okay, good. And the current ratio and the asset test ratio, also called the quick ratio, are very popular. And now make sure you have the balance sheet at your disposal. So let's take a look at slide 27, the current ratio. The current ratio takes the current assets and divides them by the current liabilities, which is pretty straightforward. Can you find the current assets on the balance sheet? Okay, good. What are they? $11,874,000,000. Yeah, Walgreens is a very, very liquid company. And the current liabilities are $8,883,000,000. So if you divide 11,874 divided by 8,883, you get 1.337, which is good. Anything over 1 is normally considered acceptable because if your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems. You're not going to be having trouble making payroll, having trouble paying your taxes, paying your vendors. Yeah, obviously the greater the number, the better. But then you get into situations where it just gets ridiculous. Companies like Microsoft and Apple that have cash coming out of their ears and the current ratio is, you know, 1,000 or something. This is ridiculous. It's time to take some of that money and give it back to the shareholders, guys. And that's exactly what companies like Apple and Microsoft have been doing. They've been paying back more in dividends because what are they going to do? How many times can Microsoft rewrite Word? Every time they do it, they make it worse. Every time they rewrite Windows, they make it worse. Go ahead, sue me. See if I care. I'll show you my PCs that I can't get working because... Okay, I'm sorry. I digress. Anyway, so Walgreens is in great shape, folks. No problem. But what's this net working capital, 28? Well, this is not a ratio. This is the absolute dollar measure of liquidity. In other words, some people say, look, that's all well and good to look at a ratio when it comes to liquidity. But I want to see how much cash you really have above and beyond what you need for your current liabilities. So it's the current ratio, but in dollar terms. So you take the current assets and you subtract. We're not dividing here. It's not a ratio. You subtract out the current liabilities. Are you with me? You understand? So if you take the current liabilities, I'm sorry, current assets, 11,874, and you subtract the $8,880,000,000. Yeah, you see they have, you know, a few billion dollars of extra working capital, folks. And so if the current ratio is greater than 1, then obviously this number is going to be positive because the first number is greater than the second number. If the current ratio is less than 1, then net working capital will be negative. And of course, the higher the working capital, net working capital, the better. Unless you get into situations like Microsoft and Apple where it's ridiculous. And it's not as popular as the current ratio, but some people like to, you know how much cash is actually available above and beyond, or not always, not just cash, but current assets is available above and beyond the current liabilities. Now this next ratio sure has a scary name, doesn't it? The acid test ratio, or also called the quick ratio. It's the current ratio, but instead of the current ratio, what we do is we subtract out the inventory. So you see there's actually two ways of calculating the numerator. We could do what we did here, take the cash plus the accounts receivable, plus the short-term investments, plus the other current assets. Or you could simply take the total current assets and subtract out inventory. Either way, it's going to give you the same number. And then we divide that by the current liability. So what we're saying in the acid test ratio is sure, you got all these current assets, but your inventory could become obsolete or undesirable and hence difficult or impossible to be turned into cash. So we want to know what the ratio is if all of a sudden your inventory became obsolete. Well, is this a problem with a company like Walgreens? Are diapers going to go obsolete? Maybe some of the drugs they expire, but they usually have fairly long expiration dates. That's not a problem with a company like Walgreens. But what is it a problem with a company like Hewlett Packard or Dell? Or where their equipment becomes obsolete before it's even sold? Oh, it's a computer that's 6 months old. Oh, it's ancient. So it depends on the company, doesn't it? And you'll find that a company like Walgreens has a lot of money in inventory at any one time. So if you subtract out the inventory, where do I got that one? you wind up with only $5,000,000,5022, that's the current assets minus the liability, I'm sorry, minus the inventory, my apologies, or do it cash plus accounts receivable plus short-term investments plus other current assets, I get $5,022,000,000 or $5,022,000. So when we use that in the numerator, 5,022 divided by the current liabilities of 8883, we wind up with an asset test ratio of only 0.565, which for some companies might be a red flag. But for a company like Walgreens, and I'll bet you Rite Aid and CVS, they're based probably simply the same because diapers just don't go bad. Okay, good. So we don't have to worry about that with Walgreens. But another company, we may have to be, it may be a red flag for us. Next group are the activity ratios. The activity ratios are used to measure how well a firm is managing its assets. And these are sometimes called the turnover ratios, because what we're looking for is how often we turn over a certain item, accounts receivable, or inventory, or total asset turnover. So we use data from the balance sheet and the income statement. Activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into sales or cash. Companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because this will generally lead to higher revenues. So let's take a look at the accounts receivable turnover. You take the total revenue, that's from the income statement, remember the top line number, the 72,217, okay, good. And you divide that by accounts receivable. Now, accounts receivable is on the balance sheet. Now, what is accounts receivable? If you take an accounting, you know what it is. It's money that people owe you. And in general, the higher the number, the better. It indicates the company is getting the return a company is getting from its investment in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. A high ratio implies that the company either operates on a cash basis or its extension of credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient. A low ratio implies that the company should normally reassess its credit policies in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit, not earning interest for the firm. In other words, who are the deadbeats who aren't paying us on time? You know, we give them 30 days, 45 days, but they're not paying us on time. And we got to reassess them. In other words, send them a friendly little letter saying, we're going to break your arm. No, I'm sorry, we want you to pay us. Or there are instances where that's how the industry operates. If you work in the defense industry, you know Uncle Sam's going to pay you for that jet airplane. He's going to do it, but he just takes a long time. Now, I haven't worked in the government in a long time, the federal government, it was a long time ago. And then it was a joke. It was basically a joke, and the companies understood it, and they'd laugh it off. They knew they were going to get paid. They just had to budget accordingly. But my understanding is it's better now. My understanding is the government's accounting and paying their accounts payable, their payment of bills is much more timely because the government did a big push, 70s, 80s, and 90s, to get small companies to bid on their services because they didn't like the common thought of, hey, you got to be really big to deal with the government. They said, no, we want competition. We want the small companies. But then the small companies just couldn't absorb waiting 6 months, 9 months to get paid. Look, we got to pay our employees. You got to get. So my understanding is that it's better now. That's my understanding. I don't know if you have any inside information because you work in the government, you're in the military or somewhere, you work for a defense contractor or some other contractor for the government, please let me know. But I've heard anecdotal evidence that it is better. So let's see. We didn't do the numbers, did we? My apologies. What's the total revenue? 72,217. You divide that by the accounts receivable. Now, did you find it on the balance sheet? 2,632. Did you find that? Right. and you get a turnover of 27.438. What does that mean? Well, that means that they run through their account. The total revenue is the accounts receivable is turned over 27 times a year. In other words, the money coming through the door, the total revenue, is about every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, the total revenue coming through the door is equal to their accounts receivable. And that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, Walgreens mostly pays mostly gets paid in cash, so they don't have to worry about accounts receivable. How about inventory turnover? Same idea. We're going to take the total revenue, but this time we're going to divide it by the inventory on our balance sheet. The higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from funds tied up in inventory. As with all ratios, this ratio must be compared against industry averages. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory. A high ratio either implies strong sales or ineffective inventory buying and maintenance. They got too much stuff, they don't need it. High inventory levels are unhealthy because they represent an investment with a rate of return of zero. It also opens up the company in the case of falling prices or obsolete products. Well, we're Walgreens, we don't really have to worry too much about that. If we take the total revenue, 72,217, and divide it by the inventory, and where's the inventory? 6,852, is that what you found? Yeah, 6,8, almost $7 billion of inventory. We get an asset turnover of a little over 10.54, is that what you got? That means 10 times a year, or about every 5 weeks, 5-6 weeks. I mean, you walk into a Walgreens or another drugstore, and you see everything on the shelves, and you just think, well, it's always there, right? It's always there for me. No. You're constantly, if you're Walgreens or any other retailer, any other large retailer, you're constantly stocking the shelves and turning over the inventory. So you walk into a Walgreens, and then you come back another 5 weeks later. Some things go every other day, you know, the diapers and the formula. I worked in a drugstore a million years ago, and we were always bringing formula out, because we went through that quickly. And other things, you know, longer. But in general, everything in the store will be turned over in 5-6 weeks. Okay, next one. The total asset turnover. Well, this measures the total revenue against the total assets. So instead of using the accounts receivable or the inventory, we take a look at the total assets on the balance sheet. The total asset turnover ratio measures the firm's efficiency at using assets to support sales and revenue. The higher the number, the better. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnover. Those with high profit margins have low asset turnover. And what are we talking about? If you're a company that has a low profit margin, you're selling your product over and over and over and over and over again. Milk, right? Exactly. And people would say, well, they only make a few pennies, feel sorry for them. Yeah, but they make it every day. And then if you're selling cars where you don't sell that many, or jet airplanes, you tend to have low asset turnover because you just don't make that many of them. Okay, great. So that's the total. Oh, did we calculate it? What did we get? Two? Right. Twice a year, because they have some serious assets, folks, they turn over their assets. 2.03 is what I got, 3.5. You do it. Make sure you get it right. And then compare it to CBS and compare it to Rite Aid. Now, let's take a look at the leverage ratios. I'm sorry, we did the liquidity ratios. These are the leverage ratios, and these are the last ones we'll take a look at. These are financial ratios that are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. Because debt, you know, it's a great thing. And it can be a horrible thing. It's a great thing because you need some cash somehow. You don't have it yourself, so you need to get from point A to point B, and you need a loan. Maybe you need a bond. We'll discuss bonds in detail when we get the bonds. Or maybe you need a short-term corporate paper, short-term loans. But too much debt, exactly, it can get you in trouble. So these three ratios, debt to equity times interest earned and total debt to total asset, allow us to measure the amount of debt and how it's being supported by the operations of the firm. Let's read at the bottom. Debt is often referred to as leverage. We're going to use this term again and again as we go through the rest of the semester, leverage. The idea is you're using other people's money to make your money. You're using the borrowed money as a lever, like a pulley, you know, if you know what I'm talking about, to increase your earnings. In fact, when one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. They didn't come up with their own money to buy out that company. They borrowed that money. Now, it may be a good thing if they got a good price for the company and they can take advantage of the profit that that company is going to produce, or it can get them into serious trouble if there's an economic downturn or things don't go as well as they expected, and now they got these huge debt payments. So you see, debt's a two-edged sword. Let's take a look at slide number 35, the debt-to-equity ratio. Now, this might look familiar to some of you because we do this for us. We do this for individuals in the personal finance class, Business 121. But this is for the company. A measure of a company's financial leverage calculated by dividing long-term debt by the shareholder's equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. So you take the long-term debt and you divide it by total stockholders' equity. So those are on the balance sheet. Can you find them? I have $4,477,000,4477. Okay, good. That's the long-term debt. And folks, for years, Walgreens was, you had to notice, one of the companies is, I'm not a big fan of debt, I'll tell you right off the bat. I mean, everybody has their biases. I like a nice, clean balance sheet. Just for me and for the companies I like to invest in. And for years, Walgreens had no long-term debt. Literally, I mean, nothing to speak of. And then when interest rates just plummeted, they must have looked at the boardroom, they're looking around, like, you guys, we can get, 10-year financing, 20-year financing for 2% or 1.5%. You want to take advantage of that? I guess they all said, sure, let's do it. So they've loaded up, and it's still not that much compared to the total stockholders' equity of the firm. It's still a small number compared to some other companies. A higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means that a company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This can result in lower earnings because you have to pay the interest expense. Sometimes investors only use interest-bearing long-term debt instead of the total liabilities. So the lower, the better, in my humble opinion. So you take that $4,477,000,000 and divide it by the total stockholders' equity, $19,454, you find that? And you get 23%, which is much higher than it has been in the past for Walgreens, but still very, very, they can handle this long-term, especially at the interest rates that they're being charged. Slide number 36. Now, here was a very popular ratio with Benjamin Graham, the time interest earned. How many times throughout the year does the company earn back its interest payments? And what we use are earnings before interest and taxes and divide that by the interest expense. Well, given that interest rates are so low, you look at the interest expense and it's $165 million, which, to us, that's a lot of money, but a company that's earning $2.5 billion a year, that's a very small amount of money. So you take the earnings before interest and taxes, which I find on the income statement as 4060. Did you find it? Okay. You divide it by the interest expense, 165, right? and you get 24.6. So in other words, 24 and a half times a year, every 2 weeks, Walgreens is earning back their interest. Is Walgreens in danger of going bankrupt anytime soon? No. Yeah. Normally, 3 or 4 is considered adequate, and you got 24.6 here. So, Walgreens, as I said, it's a company after my own heart. I love less debt. Make love, not loans. If you've taken the Business 121 class, you know how my feelings are on debt and credit. Okay, slide number 37. Our last ratio is the total debt to total assets. And, excuse me, this is a measure of how much of a company's total assets have been financed by debt. So you take the total liabilities. Could you find that on the balance sheet? I found 16027, right? And you divide that by the total assets, which we've already seen in one of our previous ratios, 35,481, and you get 45.17%, a little bit less than half. Total debt to total assets includes both short-term debt and long-term debt and assets. If it varies substantially from the debt-to-equity ratio, the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt. And a heavy reliance on short-term debt can denote more risk. Well, in the case of Walgreens, yeah, don't worry about it. These are current liabilities, which are easily matched by the current assets. Even though it looks high by our standards, in the case of Walgreens, it's not a problem. They can more than handily pay their debt obligations. All right? Cool. And then, as we said, the exercise I'm going to ask you to do is to go do this for another company or two companies. And I chose 4 or 5 companies, but you could choose any company. Make sure that they're real companies making real profits. We prefer large cap, but if you want to do a small cap or a medium cap, just make sure it's a real company, all right? And then, if it piques your interest, look at their competitors and see how they compare to their competitors. And you'll get a stew, so to speak, or a puzzle or pieces. I don't know where the analogy is perfect. But remember that no one ratio is the ratio, bingo, that you want to make the decision on. But when you do read The Intelligent Investor someday, you will read it, right? You'll read how Benjamin Graham really relied on that times interest earned to show that where some investors were really lying down on the job when they should have realized that this company was in serious trouble. So there are some times when one... or maybe a few ratios can be a serious red flag or warning or whatever. So I hope you've enjoyed our discussion of financial ratios. It's certainly not as difficult as the dividend discount models or the price ratio models, right? Yes, it's fairly straightforward, and I think that's why they sort of pushed it to the back of the book. But it helps round out the picture of the companies that we're studying. And again, is it going to make us a better investor? Is it going to make us better investors? I hope so. I hope that it'll help us make better, well-informed, long-term oriented, prudent decisions about the companies we invest in. And we won't just be rolling the dice and because somebody else has told us that this is a great company to buy. All right? So, we have done the heavy lifting, folks, for stocks, chapters 5, 6, and 17. We now are going to turn our attention to some silliness. Yeah, exactly. So, chapters 7 and 8, you'll find that there's a little bit in there, a little bit of meat to the bones, but there's a whole lot of fluff, too. There's a whole lot of silliness going on. And we'll do our best to have fun with it. So we will see you in our next chapter, chapter 7, on stock price behavior and market efficiency.